In the winter of 1953, the sleepy town of Bladenboro, North Carolina, was thrown into chaos by a series of gruesome animal attacks. The perpetrator? A mysterious creature that locals dubbed the Beast of Bladenboro, or the Vampire Beast. Over 13 days, this beast tormented the town and left a lasting legacy. It was never captured, and today many assume the town of Bladenboro is home to a cryptid, while others suspect an animal that was once thought extinct. This is a study of strange. Welcome back to the show. I'm Michael May, and today I have a very special guest, Kara Schaff. Hi, Kara.
Hello.
So, Kara, I wanted you on today's episode because you're an expert in cryptids, because you're from the Pacific Northwest, right? So I'm just automatically assuming you grew up in a very Harry and the Hendersons situation with Bigfoot in your living room, correct?
Definitely in my living room. Okay. It was in my living room, and it's the Northwest does have that mystique filled with evergreen trees. It's dark, it's cloudy, it's drizzly. There's a lot of sparkly vampires, apparently.
Sparkly vampires? What do you mean?
Twilight nature.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Why we could exist, yep. Is because, you know, we never see sun.
Yep. So did you, because today's episode, we're going to cover this tale of the Bladenboro Beast, which is in North Carolina. However, the story does kind of run parallel to like cryptid talk of these like undiscovered creatures. So in terms of the cryptids, because you're from the Pacific Northwest, before we get into the Bladenboro story, do you believe in stuff like Bigfoot? Do you believe in strange creatures that have yet to be discovered or anything like that?
I think I'm going to go with the answer, I want to.
Oh,
do
nice.
I? I'm not sure. Do I want to? Nice. Yes, I want to.
Yeah. Did you ever have any experiences out in the, you know, the forests of Washington State where you heard strange screams or saw interesting animals?
I mean, coyotes definitely sound terrifying.
Yes, they do.
Coyotes and their howls and their laughs are really creepy.
Really creepy. They are. Yeah. And in fact, that may even come up when we talk about theories for this story, because people, when it comes to cryptids, a lot of people talk about noises that, oh, you don't hear that kind of stuff out in the woods. And it's like, no, I've spent enough time in the woods to know that there are all sorts of very scary sounds. And sometimes they may just be coming from a coyote or something similar, you know?
Or a screaming goat.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. Yeah. So this story, the Bladenboro Beast, have you ever heard of it? Does it sound familiar at all?
No, not yet.
So today I wanted to do something a little lighter because I had two episodes dealing with death and potential murders and serial murders. And I had to cleanse my palate. And it's been a long time since I've done a cryptid story. And it's funny, when I first wanted to start on this podcast, I was like, I can talk about Bigfoot all the time. And it's like, I've had like one episode talking about Bigfoot. So I am excited to talk about this one, even though I do think this story is a little different than other cryptid stories, because the basis for it, these 13 nights in the 50s, there were real attacks on animals. And so it's coming from a very real place. It's not just like hundreds of years of interesting folklore kind of feeding into a belief. Like, this was a period of time where some very real stuff happened. And it is still a mystery. Sometimes this is referred to as a vampire cat, which I love that term. Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
So let me give you a little background on Bladenboro, which I kept wanting to read as Bladenboro, but it is Bladenboro, North Carolina. It is a small, serene town in North Carolina, and it's known for being a close-knit community, very peaceful, kind of rural living. It's 150-ish miles away from Charlotte, and it has a history in the lumber industry. There's a lot of pine forests and swamps in the area. And in the winter of 1953-1954, as I've already said, the tranquility was shattered by a series of mysterious and violent animal attacks, It terrorized the town and birthed a legend of a local cryptid. You know what? Why don't I do this? I'm going to change up my outline here a little, Kara. Let me just kind of read or share kind of the whole story of these like 13 days that attacks happened. And then we could kind of dive into some thoughts and theories and some other things.
Sounds good.
So on the night of December 29th, 1953, in the town of Clarkden, which is not far from Bladenborough, a woman heard a sound outside, sort of a yelp or a screaming animal. She went outside to investigate and heard every dog on the block howling and barking. Wow. And right there, at the edge of the yard, she saw a faint shape of a four-legged creature that was cat-like in movement and silhouette, and then it disappeared in the shadows. She called the police and mentioned the strange things were afoot, and it was discovered that a dog had been attacked and killed. But by what, no one quite knew for certain. And this is the first sighting of these animal attacks. And then on New Year's Eve, a few days later, police were called about two dogs being mutilated on Woody Storm's farm. Chief of Bladenborough, or at least the area, Roy Forez was called, went to look around, and he found two dead dogs. And some accounts claim that these two dogs were just dead on the ground and they had no puncture wounds and weren't sort of injured in any way except for puncture wounds on the neck and they had been drained of blood.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's the vampire part. But however, a lot of accounts of these first two dead dogs, or at least that night, is that they were completely mutilated. It's almost the opposite of that, where their heads were crushed and things of that nature. So two more dogs were attacked that night. This time, they were mutilated for sure, according to the accounts. And this is farmer Johnny Vouse claimed that the heads were ripped off and the skulls were crushed. The first attack was around 10:30 p.m. and then the beast came back at around 1:30 a.m. and attacked the other dog. What's really terrifying about this, or at least very interesting, is that one of the dogs on Vouse's farm was not consumed, was not eaten. And that's where things get a little weird, because normally when animals attack animals, for the most part, it's to feed.
That's a lot weird. That's not a little weird. That's a lot weird. What?
That is a lot weird. So I do want to mention this real quick. So Carolina Panthers, there's a football team named after them, right? And people have already, out of these first few attacks, you have the woman, the first night that this began, talked about a giant cat-like creature. And some other people think that they also saw these cat-like creatures that were big. Some describe, you know, 100 plus pounds with long tails. Some describe little tails that's, you know, 60 pounds. The witness accounts over these coming days are very varied. But I want to talk about the Carolina Panther, because that is a legitimate theory for this. However, at the time of this story in the 50s, the Carolina Panther was already extinct for about 50 or 60 years. I think the last known sighting was in the 1880s.
What?
So, yeah. And I didn't know that. Like, I just assumed there's panthers, but there's no panthers in that area at all. I wish everybody could see Kara's face right now.
What?
Yes.
I also think a panther would crush another animal's skull.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm coming back to as well. I was like, this is just brutal. What? Okay.
And that's why it's scary. And you got to think, you know, a small town that's rural, there's farmers, you know, the dogs are important. It's not just loved pets. Like, these are also loved pets that are also probably worker dogs that are probably really important to the farm. So you got to imagine that people are really devastated by this and scared that this is happening, especially in such a violent manner.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is it only dogs, or is this happening to farm animals as well?
So it does happen to some other farm animals.
Okay.
And I may not dive into all those stories, but I will say that just over the coming days, there are a number of dogs attacked. I think that's probably the most. But there were some goats, there were pigs, there were chickens. So it you know, runs across these animals, and probably easy prey because they're probably gated and, you know, can't run too far. But that's an assumption. So two additional dogs were soon found after those initial attacks as well. Authorities start getting calls, you know, word spreads, a small town, word spreads. And so everybody starts to think that they see some crazy animal. And that's where you get to start to get all these witness accounts. There's a quote I have written down in my notes here that says, like a bear or a panther, which I just found funny. That's why I wanted to write that one down, because they're very different.
Very but, different shapes and postures. And
yes, exactly.
Movements. Like, what?
Yeah. And that's not like multiple people saying, that's one person that said like a bear or a panther. Other people think that it looked kind of like a big wolf. Some people described it as being 3 feet long. Some people described it as, you know, long tails. And then,
yeah, did we get any werewolf?
No werewolf stories. No werewolf stories. I would say most sightings definitely were more of the feline nature. So large cats. Someone reported hearing the creature make a noise that sounded like a woman screaming, but it was the animal that was making it. A gentleman named DJ Pate said he watched from his service station as a dog was attacked by a large creature and dragged into the woods.
Oh.
Yeah. And a lot of these creatures, again, had been, quote unquote, drained of blood. And Chief Flores decided he's got to call in some help after a couple days of this.
Yeah.
So in honor about January 4th, Chief Flores had an autopsy done on one of the dogs. And Flores said the dog was found the night before they did the autopsy. It was opened up and there was no more than 2 or 3 drops of blood in it. And this immediately made me think, by the way, of the chupacabra. Do you know much about the chupacabra? Because a lot of that is like reports of cows being drained of blood. And so it has a similar kind of background, which is actually one of my theories on this story, which is why I bring it up now that I'll get to later. So there's connective tissue with these cryptid kind of stories where these animals are drained of blood. Some people talk about the dogs having sort of surgical precision around some of the wounds on the body, that kind of stuff, which again, I'll talk about in my theories because I do want to talk about that. A man named Tater Shaw read reports and wanted to know more, and he heard about an attacked goat and he wanted to go see it to kind of learn more about all these reports. And he went and he claimed that he saw the goat and the goat's head was flat as a tater, which I don't know if he said that and then he got the nickname Tater Shaw or if he's saying tater in the description because his name is Tater. But I do love that anecdote. Not even an anecdote. That's an actual story from Tater Shaw. Yeah, and then there's a sort of a local legend that bloodhounds were brought out to help search for this creature in the woods, and the dogs got to like the edge of the forest and were like, nuh-uh, and turned around and left, and were like, no, we're not searching. Yeah,
I would agree if I was a dog. I wouldn't do it.
Yep. And I'm going to read a little section of a newspaper article that came out after all the attacks, but I just like this little paragraph. This is from the News and Observer from Raleigh, North Carolina, on January 18th of 1954. More terrifying are reports of a mysterious cat-like vampire beast, which has dragged dogs into the swamplands near Bladenboro during the past 2 weeks and slain them. Some accounts have termed the beast of Bladenboro a vampire because the jugular veins of its victims were severed. If Bladenboro is alarmed, officials of the State Museum of Natural History advised yesterday that while reports of strange beasts in North Carolina are common, the beast themselves aren't. I didn't realize I found that funny until just now. But so, and then it got a little more serious. I mean, if it wasn't serious, it definitely was serious already, but it changes a little bit on January 5th. And that's when there was a human interaction with the beast. Yes. So the beast of Bladenboro on this evening was near a Miss C.E. Kinslaw's house. And C.E. Kinslaw, similar to the original story of the first time the beast attacked, she heard the sounds of crying dogs outside her house. She went outside, she looked around. I don't know how far out into her yard she went, but she was outside when she saw a very large feline type animal running directly towards her. And now I'm going to read from an account that she gave, or that a newspaper article had about it. She said she heard the dogs whimpering early tonight and went to investigate. Near the dog, she said, was what looked like a big mountain lion. It raced from three doors down the dirt street in front of her house to a few feet from her porch, then turned back when she screamed and her husband rushed out. A neighbor also came to her aid. Chief Flores said the tracks in the dirt were bigger than a silver dollar, which is, that's big for a print of what you'd assume would be a cat.
Yeah.
Some accounts claim that she was actually attacked. She was not. All the newspaper articles that were reporting right there at the time never included that. So I think that's just happened as the legend has grown over time. Soon after this, a farmer lost three pigs and some cows. Some other animals were found throughout searches for the animal that had been killed. Hunters were invited to come to town to search for the animal. And that is where we are actually going to read a scene.
Okay.
The mayor of Bladenboro, a guy named Woodrow Fussell, was the one that decided to ask for hunters to come help. And he wanted to put out some sort of, I'm just going to call it a press release for lack of a better term, to like, hey, come to town. So we're going to read a little scene of Woodrow Fussell putting in a call for that. Now, do you want to read? I think you should read the mayor. I think
it's really? Sure.
You be Woodrow Fussell, and I will read the sort of the stage directions and set it up, and I'll read the operator. All right, you ready?
Okay.
A caricature of a 1950s small-town Americana mayor, slightly overweight, suspenders, and an accent that is definitely not what he sounded like, hurries to an old-timey phone hanging on the wall of his office. He spins the handle on the side of the phone to ring up the operator and holds a small cylinder to his ear. Operator, how may I direct your call?
Peggy, is that you?
It's Margaret.
I thought Peggy was working today. Doesn't matter. Margaret is the mayor. Get me the paper. I want him to write a story. This cat is big.
I hear it's big.
Yes, yes, but also it's a big story.
All right.
I need the paper. No, no. Give me the Gazette in Charlotte. We're going to go statewide with this, Peggy.
It's Margaret.
I want newspapermen, hunters, fishers, tourists, all of them to come down and look for this kitty. Sorry.
Isn't it dangerous?
A little publicity is good for town. In fact, I'm going to book a film in the theater. There's a film called The Big Cat. We'll sell out every showing, I tell ya.
I have the Gazette on the line. Do you want me to connect?
Yes. There's a lot of exclamation points there.
There were a lot of exclamation points. So that's, very good job with one of my very dorky scenes I write for the show, Kara. So what's... this is true. So, I mean, not that exact scene, but the mayor did ask for hunters. He wanted people to come to town. He put out the word for it. He did say that publicity was good for the town.
Mm-hmm.
And he owned the theater in town. The mayor did. And he booked this movie called The Big Cat, one of these like very schlocky 1950s horror monster adventure movies. And he did. He booked it and was like, hey, come see the cat in real life. Or not real life, but come see it on this big screen. And so he was taking advantage of this story that was spreading around. And that in and of itself lends fuel to the growing legend of what this is, of course. Now, hunters came out and started searching for the beast. It started with like there was a night, I think like the 4th or something like that, where there were like 500 or so hunters and people that came out to hunt the beast. And a day or so later, there were like 1,000 or more by some reports. And that was more than the population of the town.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And the rest, like more of the residents right around the 5th, right around that C.E. Kinslaw attack, were told stay inside. Like, don't go out at night. Don't wander the neighborhood. Don't go into the woods. And, you know, for safety reasons, there's actually a great thing I read. What was it called? It's something jug. It's like a jug bomb or whatever it was. But a lot of people in this town didn't have indoor plumbing yet.
Oh.
So they all had like outhouses and things.
Oh, dear.
And so they had a jug inside the house for in the middle of the night. When you had to pee, you pee into the jug and then you take it out in the morning. So there was an anecdote I read about all those jugs were getting used way more than normal because people didn't want to go out to the outhouse.
Absolutely.
And this is a quote from a newspaper article at the time. It says, a half dozen brave youths and their dogs spent January 4th searching for the creature, while that night, Flores and 8 to 10 other officers conducted their own hunt. Hunters who traveled to Bladenboro from Wilmington also searched for the beast that evening, reportedly tracking it for 3 miles around the swamp. So a few days after all these hunters had come out for a while and the town is inundated with these people and everybody's scared and terrified, the locals wise up that it's probably not safe to have 1,000 hunters in the woods either, not for fear of the animal, but for fear of people shooting each other and going crazy. And there are some reports of people seeing shadows and just shooting at it, because it's, you know, that's what happens. This is human nature.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of crazy people around with guns. And a lot of them, as much as people are scared, you know, some people are probably excited. They're like, oh, this will be fun to go hunt, you know, some animal. We could be the ones to find it. Like, there's always those people. And it gets dangerous. So the hunts are called off pretty quick. And I think that was very wise of the mayor and the city and everybody else that may have had an influence in that decision. And yeah, some accounts also say, I know I'm jumping around here a little bit, but I do want to mention here that some of the witness accounts, for the most part, being, as we've already said a million times, like a wolf or a big cat, some people do talk about glowing yellow eyes, which you also hear in other like cryptid stories as well.
I think that is true of felines, though. When there's a reflective
light, isn't it?
Yeah. A glowing yellow eye.
Yeah.
Or eyes. They probably have two eyes. Maybe not.
They may not, but for the most part, they should. No, that's very true. The reflective nature of it. Being a Florida boy, I more think about alligators and frogs, because you see alligators' eyes are kind of orangish reddish in the reflection of light, and frogs are kind of green.
Yeah, cats, it's usually with that yellow or like a neon green sometimes.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because that may tie into some theories here. So it's fascinating to me how, you know, you have this fear, you have this mystery, you have publicity. The story is spreading around the state and around the Southeast. And I personally see a relation to the reason people believe this, or the reason people even started seeing it, is because of the hysteria around it. Because you hear suddenly, if your neighbors are saying there's a giant cat in the woods, if you look out in the woods at night and you see any shape, your mind is going to like make it look like a giant cat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I, on this show, I did the story of, I'm forgetting the gentleman's name now, but it's where the term flying saucer comes from. And it was a guy actually in the Pacific Northwest in a plane that saw these, it saw these, you know, flying, strange, unidentified flying things. And he described it as looking like saucers skipping on water. And the term flying saucer came from that. But the whole nation went over this like flying saucer hysteria at the time. And you get thousands of reports of people seeing flying saucers after that. And it's because of that influence from this sort of mass hysteria and things. You start seeing what other people are telling you to see. And so I do think there was obviously something really going on with these animals. I'm not trying to take away from that. But I do think the reason you have so many sightings is because people are being influenced by their neighbors saying it.
Well, especially when you get into like, is it a cat or a bear territory?
Yeah.
What did you see?
Exactly. And then January 8th rolls around, and a gentleman named Luther Davis found a bobcat struggling with a trap in Big Swamp, which is the perfect name for a swamp. And he had to kill the bobcat because it was acting kind of crazy and was very strong and could have, you know, he could have gotten hurt. So he had to kill the bobcat. And authorities quickly went out to the press and said, the mystery is solved. The beast is killed. Another man, right around the same time, Bruce Solves, hit a large cat while driving his car. The cat died because of the accident. It was about 24 inches long, and it looked like a small leopard. And he took it with him to be like, this could be the beast.
Yeah.
It does turn out that was an ocelot.
Oh.
And what's interesting about that is they are not native to North Carolina. And it's expected that this had escaped from an animal show near Lumberton, North Carolina, just that fall. So like, you know, a month or two before that. Another man, Barry Lewis, said he too killed the beast, but there appears to be no corroborating evidence to that. I don't know if he's just saying it. I don't think he had a cat like the other guys did.
Guys, I did it. It was me. You're welcome.
Yes. But what's interesting about this is the attacks do stop.
Oh.
So something happens there. Whether it was one of these cats or not, it's things stop and they die down. And oh, thunder jugs. I found the pee jug thing. It's called thunder jugs. Just out of my notes. Thunder jugs. Yeah. I do want to also say here, so the weather that winter was very cold, like colder than normal. And some sciencey people I don't know the proper terminology for who studies these things.
I think that
but people, yep, sciencey people. And they said that this kind of cold weather can affect wildlife behavior, okay, possibly contributing to the attacks or the hysteria surrounding them. And now we're going to dive into some theories, okay, Kara. So, well, let me ask you first. What is it? You tell me. You're the expert on cryptids. Tell me.
Definitely the expert. I'm leaning into the rabid bobcat area, the one in the trap, because it was acting crazy. It was definitely a threat. I don't know if bobcats do this or not, but when we was talking about a woman screaming, mountain lions do sound like a woman screaming. They do.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that would be the same one. Yeah, that's my running theory, is the rabid bobcat.
I was going to save this till the end, but my personal theory is that it's likely a bobcat as well, because they do have bobcats. Now, bobcats, for those that don't know, bobcats are bigger than a house cat. They're usually about double the size, but they're not huge. They're not as big as cougars or anything like that. And they do not attack larger animals than them. They typically eat things like rabbits and hares and chickens and small rodents and things like that. But this like feisty bobcat, and I don't even know if it was the bobcat that got caught in the trap, but I think cats are hunters by nature. That is their instincts. They're very good at it. And, you know, if one is potentially rabid, and I've been reading about that, I'll talk about that in a little bit too. I do think that there's a world where it could have attacked things. And I also think people embellish attacks. So I do think like skulls crushed and stuff.
I was just thinking, I was like, yeah. And again, a bobcat crushing a skull seems a little.
Yeah, I don't think I can do that. Yeah. And I can't find many pictures that actually show those animals that are described as being crushed.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm kind of leaning to bobcat, because I just don't think there's enough there yet to point to something else. But that's my own personal theory. And I will get into some more things here and talk about rabies. Because I think rabies is something that you do have to consider no matter what you think about it. There's also a theory that it could be a large dog. There is a guy named A.R. Stanton who lived in Lumberton, North Carolina, and he thought it was a German Shepherd and Hound mix named Big Boy that was like a neighbor's of his dog or something like that and lived near Big Swamp. And he suspected that Big Boy, because he was kind of a mean, feisty dog, had escaped and done it. And he had known Big Boy to have jumped fences and killed chickens and stuff like this in the past. So that's a theory. I don't know if I buy that, but that is a theory out there.
It's a grudge against the dog.
It does sound like it. It does sound like he has a bias against that dog. let me read here. This is from the same article I read earlier from Raleigh. But it does mention something that I think ties into both of our theories about a bobcat. And here's the quote. Such reports almost always are highly imaginative. That's talking about like witness testimony. Zoologist F. Meacham said, very few of them appear sufficiently authentic to be investigated by naturalists. The thrush is that if there was were evidence that the beast of Bladenborough were panther or even a gray wolf, museum officials would be highly interested. The last panthers officially reported in coastal North Carolina were in Hyde County in the 1880s. Investigations of the frightening beast, which local residents called a wampus cat near Raleigh in recent years, indicated the creature was actually an otter. That's a different beast. That's like a different report. Zoologists offered no explanation for the beast of Bladenboro, but doubted that two suspects slain this week would have attacked dogs unless they had hydrophobia. Hydrophobia is rabies.
Okay.
So the point of that, the reason I wanted to read that is, A, you had these weird attacks on animals that people thought was a giant cat that turned out to be an otter somewhere else.
Otters are really small. Am I incorrect?
No, they can get big.
Oh,
they can get big. Yeah. I don't know, but they can get big. Like when, because growing up in Florida, they're big. They're big. Right. And I think they're considered the apex predators where I'm from, not alligators, because like otters can actually attack alligators. Yeah, they're super cute, but you don't want to get them mad.
My head just exploded, Michael. What?
Yeah, yeah. So I find that interesting because it does show how people can jump to a conclusion and start thinking they see something and then it turns out to be something else entirely. But also I think, you know, the idea that they're not going to attack dogs, like these big cats, yeah. unless they have hydrophobia. That kind of leads into the rabies thing with the bobcat yeah. to me. That's why I mentioned that. Yeah. Yeah.
That is insane. Wow.
Yeah. So those are some of the basic theories for some natural explanations. So a big cat, like, oh, and let me also mention, it very well could be a mountain lion, a cougar, a jaguar, yeah. and all those things, because they're all either this, I forget which ones are all the same. It just depends on where you are under what name you use for them. But I think mountain lion is one of those. It's like cougars and jaguars are all the same. And I apologize if I am wrong about that. Please, listeners, tell me how to correct myself. But you can, even though they're saying panthers are extinct in the area, maybe they're not. Like, maybe there's still a few floating around out there in the wilderness, in the deep wilderness, or like that ocelot, maybe one escaped from a zoo, from a traveling show, from a circus. So I do think from a quote unquote, the natural theories, you can actually lump in big cat into that, I think.
I'm definitely picturing a traveling cat show that just something happened. All of them broke out. Chaos.
Yep. That's a show
Bob
right there.
Was
that's
also like, in that traveling show.
Yes. Yes. The bobcat, all of them were. Yeah. So there's some supernatural theories as well. Of course there is. So people, you know, I mentioned cryptids a lot tonight. People do think there could be an actual beast of Bladenboro, some kind of like feline, cat-like big creature that lives in the swamps and the forest that we have yet to have discovered. There are even accounts, and people can do this on their own if you want. Try to Google like modern beast of Bladenboro attacks and stuff. You will find that there are sightings of big cat-like creatures in North Carolina and South Carolina around that region still to this day. Okay. How real that is, I don't know, but you do kind of see that come up in the area. And the glowing eyes, as much as we know they reflect, some people tell stories that they're not shining a light or their headlights not pointing in a but they'll see glowing eyes in the woods, and that's obviously very freaky. It maybe it's an animal that we have yet to find. And yeah, so those are the general theories. And now I want to circle back to that chupacabra connection I saw with the blood drawn from the body, the surgical type wounds.
Yes.
That people seem to never have an explanation for except for science. So,
science.
And I wanted to look up this, and I didn't do a super deep dive into it, but I remember seeing documentaries years ago about the chupacabra because I love stuff like this. So of course I'm going to watch that. But here's the thing about bloodless animals is that, and I'm just going to read what I copied down from this report, and I'll have a link to this in my show notes. Bloodlessness, meanwhile, might be attributed to liver mortis. When an animal dies, the heart stops, the blood stops circulating, thus settling the blood via gravity, creating a bloodless effect in some surface parts of a carcass.
Whoa.
And this is I should point out, this is actually about cattle mutilations where I got this from, because those are like, it's aliens because they're drained of blood and all this kind of stuff. So in Washington County, Arkansas, in 1979, the sheriff's department conducted an experiment. It placed a dead cow in a field for 48 hours and found it looked a lot like the ostensibly mutilated ones. Bacterial bloating had caused its skin to tear in an incision-like manner, similar to what had been described in some ranchers' reports. Maggots and blowflies, meanwhile, had cleaned out the animal's organs. So that's essentially the explanation of why you can find dead animals, and it looks like there's surgical precision around the wounds, and it looks like the blood has been sucked from its body, is because of these things. And I remember seeing that in a chupacabra thing years ago, so that's why I wanted to look that up. And to me, this just ties into a bobcat, a big cat kind of theory, because if a cat is rabid and it is attacking just because it's mad and it's not necessarily trying to eat, or it's, you know, feels like it's being encroached on its territory and it's, you know, aggressive, people may find those dead animals later and think that they've been sucked of their blood, but in reality, they were just killed. Yeah. and you have a livor mortis. So, yeah.
Were they finding it 48 hours later, or were they finding it later that evening?
That is the question. So as much as I'm trying to find explanations for it, the Beast in Blattenborough still has questions that were never answered, which that is one of them. If it was a natural explanation, a lot of these animals were found within 48 hours. So how can this still be happening within that? And I'm going to read one more thing here. Okay. This is a report from Lumberton just about a year later after the Beast of Blattenborough attack. A mysterious animal struck last night, killing 5 pigs and 3 chickens, giving rise to the famed Beast of Blattenborough is once again on the prowl. The animals were mutilated and 4 had crushed skulls. No blood was evident, indicating the killer employed the same blood-sucking traits as the Blattenborough beast. And again, there's still reports to this day about strange cat-like big creatures. So maybe there really is a Beast of Blattenborough, and it's not just a bobcat. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe,
with their smartphones, just take a picture next time.
Exactly. Come on, people. Like, we have HD on our phones now. Like, record a nice video with a lot of detail. Come on. No, but I did want to leave it at that, because as much as I always try to go to some natural explanation to stuff, that's me. That's what I do.
Logical.
But the reason I like this story is because I liked that you could pinpoint when this folk legend of a cryptid started. And I like that there's still questions around it, even though I feel pretty confident it could be a bobcat or similar. There's still some strange questions around the Beast of Blattenborough. There you go. That's the story, Kara.
Wow.
Did you solve it? Did you solve it? Please say you solved it. Break the case wide open. Let's make some headlines.
Rabbit otters. Which one?
Rabbit otters. There you go. There you go. I love the idea of rabbit otters.
Is this otter?
Yeah, I love otters so much. I think they're so cool. I would love if they're actually like the Beast of Blattenborough. I'd be rooting for them too. I'd be like, yeah, come on, otter. They're so cute.
I might be rooting for them too. I mean, unless it's my dog, but yeah, I might be rooting for them too.
Yep. So unrelated, out here in California, if you go up to like the central coast of California, we have sea otters. And I remember reading like they don't really exist anywhere except I think like Central California up. So probably also where you're from. And they're so cute.
They're so cool.
And they float on their back and they eat off their tummy and like they're
just
so awesome.
And they hold hands when they sleep.
Yeah. Oh, do they really?
Yeah, that's really
cute. Wow. They're so awesome. And maybe they're killing dogs and farm animals. Who knows?
A little less awesome.
Yes. Yeah, so, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. I wish I had a bigger ending, but I think that's it. And
what's
I love the story.
Fascinating is I have seen a bobcat in Southern California.
Yeah.
By the Bronson Caves. It was really beautiful. And I saw an ocelot in Park City, Utah. It was also gorgeous. I'm going to say wild cat creatures, very beautiful.
They are. And I used to see bobcats as a kid growing up a lot, especially at night. You would like see them driving home down, you know, on your road that your house is on. You'd see a bobcat kind of dart across. And I was always a little terrified of them, but they're really cool looking.
Yeah.
And you know, they were nothing to be scared of, though. That's the thing, is they're just kind of like wild cats and they're slightly bigger than a house cat. So, but they are predators. And I watched a video that I had to turn off, but I got captivated by it. But it showed up in one of my feeds on social media where it was a big cat attacking like a pet dog that was napping outside.
Oh, I can't watch that.
No, I absolutely had to turn it off. But what was interesting about it, the part I saw up until the attack, then I was like, oh, turn it off, is it creeped up to the dog and the dog did not wake up. And it just stood like inches from the dog for like a minute or two. It was just like standing, but it was so quiet and knew how to like not give away that it was there. And then it did, this actually ties into our story, it did attack on the neck. So that feeds into this because a lot of these animals were, you know, bit in the neck.
Well, that's still nightmare inducing.
It is. It is. Yes. Cats are, Cats are terrifying. They're not.
I love them.
I love cats. I love cats. I joke with cats. But anyway, that is the show today, Kara. Thank you so much for joining me and being our guest. And you told me beforehand, you don't really have anywhere for people to find you because they would not be able to see anything because you don't post on social media. But you do have social media.
I do have social media, but I have deleted all of it off my phone. I check it periodically. I don't really post much, so you can follow me and watch me do nothing.
Yes, you're welcome to do that. Yeah, where can people watch it's you do nothing?
Just at Kara Schaaf, which is
yes.
K-A-R-A-S-C-H-A-A-F.
There you go. And Kara is an actor. She has a movie coming out sometime later this year or next year. We don't know when yet. But it's a movie that I made. So yeah. So I will be talking about it. But yeah, thank you, Kara, so much for doing this again and bringing your cryptid expertise to the show. She just bowed.
It was more of a hat tip, but you know, same. Similar.
Yeah. Hat tips are bad.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
My bad.
Well, thank you again. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to A Study of Strange. If you like this kind of content, stop whatever you're doing right now, unless you're driving, and make sure to subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. You know how this goes. If you leave ratings and reviews and subscribe, that makes it easier for others to find the show. We will be off next week and then back after that with some more studies of strangeness. And if you're interested in supporting the show in more ways than just listening, check out our Substack, which you can find through our support tab on our website, astudyofstrange.com. Thank you again. Good night.